Welcome to Speaking of Grace, the weekly message podcast from the Whole Life Church in Orlando, Florida. We're a multi-ethnic, multicultural, and multi-generational congregation committed to our mission of loving people into a lifelong friendship with God. We are committed to our vision of being a church without walls, fully engaged in serving the people of our community. Thank you for joining us as we continue Speaking of Grace.
It seemed that death would be all that we would know, but God was not done with my life.
Life appeared to be over. I knew in my heart that following Naomi and her God was the right thing to do. But we had nothing in Bethlehem. We had no family, no protection, no property. We were destitute. That's why Naomi suggested I go to the fields.
I told Ruth, though we have nothing to our names, she might find enough food by gleaning a field, and at least we wouldn't starve. She came home that first day with so much barley. And when she told me she had been in Boaz's field,
was the first I came to. Was it dumb luck, or was it God's providence? You know, thinking about it now, I think it was a little bit of the first and a lot of the second. Boaz is an honorable man. He watched over me from the very beginning. And then when Naomi made her somewhat
unorthodox suggestion, sure, it was. But it was our only hope. And Boaz didn't let us down. I knew from the time that he was a small boy that he would grow to be a man of honor. And Ruth, God blessed me with a faithful and selfless daughter-in-law. And they are quite the pair.
The two of us. Boaz disrupted his entire life to be our guardian redeemer. But he insists that it is us, Naomi and I, who God used to guard and redeem him. And now, Naomi has a son.
The women of Bethlehem say, my God has renewed me and will sustain me in my old age. Our precious baby, Obed, has restored my family and will continue the name of my husband. I have crossed from death to life, from a destitute widow to a future
of abundance is now before me. Thanks be to the God of Naomi, to the God of Boaz, to the God who I now call my God, a God who is faithful, who restores, who took what was bitter and broken to give us hope and redemption to save our world.
Well, hello there, family. Happy graduation weekend to many people here right now, I think, right? There's a few people who are graduating over this weekend, and we're so glad you're with us. Particularly, I'm going to talk a little bit more later about this, but we have Orlando Junior Academy joining us today, their eighth grade class, and we're so happy that you are here today. And as I preach this final sermon in what has been a four-part sermon series, as we were thinking about this series, and we were thinking about what was going to be happening around this time period in graduation, I really do feel like chapter 4 of Ruth is an important chapter for people moving into a next phase of life, for people who are maybe graduating even. So pay attention, see if you can see where the connections may be there. Now, there are a few of you that this is, like I said, your first week here, and so maybe you're not familiar with the story of Ruth. Maybe you don't know what's happened in this book. So let me catch you up really quickly. A lady named Naomi has a husband named Elimelech. They have two sons. Their names are Mahlon and Chilion. Now, this family, there's a famine in Bethlehem where they live, so they move to Moab. In Moab, the two boys get married. They have wives there. But disaster strikes, Elimelech dies, and then the two boys die. And so that just leaves three widows. They hear that life is better back in Bethlehem, so they start to head back. Orpah decides to go back home after Naomi gives her permission, but Ruth says, nope, nothing's going to separate us, not even death. And so Ruth continues on with Naomi. They show up in Bethlehem. Things are tough. It's a hard situation. But Ruth goes and works in the fields of a man named Boaz, who happens to be a relative of Naomi's, and Boaz starts providing through Ruth for them. Last week, we found out that Naomi comes up with this crazy plan where she has her daughter-in-law basically propose marriage to Boaz. And at the end of last week, Ruth comes home to Naomi and says, I did what you told me to, and I don't know what's going to happen now. And Naomi says, don't worry, that man will not rest until he's taken care of this. So we're caught up. We're in chapter 4 of Ruth. And Naomi was not wrong. Boaz got on it. He did not wait a day. He did not wait till he went immediately. That morning, he gets up and he goes to the gate of the city. Now, I grew up in North Carolina a couple years ago. And we used to have these things that were not maybe as common today as they are, but in town you'd have like the general store, right? And people go hang out at the general store. And the politicians would definitely go hang out at the general store. And everybody would sit in a rocking chair and do what Southerners like to do, which is tell stories. Some people might call it gossip, whatever. And so they would sit out, and so if you knew you needed to find somebody from the town, if you needed to find the mayor, the council person, you'd go to the general store where everybody was hanging out. And this is a lot like the gate of the town in Bethlehem. So Boaz goes to the gate because he knows he's going to find all the important people of the town there. He shows up early in the morning, and when he gets to the gate, he says, I need 10 witnesses. Now, I know for us in America, we're used to juries, 12-member jury, right? But Boaz does something that's a little bit unusual for his time and place. Do you know how many people you had to have to make a legal, to witness something, to make it legal and binding in that time and place? Anybody know? Hold up fingers if you, I see a correct answer. The correct answer is 2. The correct answer is 2. You needed 2 witnesses. So Boaz gets how many? You needed, but he got, but you only needed. Do you get the sense he wanted to make sure this is really binding? There's not going to be any, well, I think they might have said, I think it was, no, we don't have twice as many witnesses as we need. We have 5 times as many witnesses as we need. This will be a binding contract. There's not going to be any dispute on it. And so he gets his witnesses together, and then he goes and finds the person that last week I talked to you about. There's a kinsman redeemer in the Israelite system. This is the person that if a family has to sell their land because they're poor, this person can purchase back the land and redeem it. And so there was a person who was closer to Naomi relationally than Boaz was. And that person was entitled to purchase her land first. And so Boaz finds that man and he says, hey, I need to talk to you. And by the way, meet my 10 witnesses. You kind of know something important is about to happen. And so the gentleman says, okay, Boaz, what's happening? And Boaz says, look, you know who Naomi is. He goes, of course, close relative. Of course I know who that is. You know she came back from Moab. Yep, I know that. So she's needing, her land needs to be redeemed. She's selling it. She needs it to be redeemed. Are you interested in redeeming it? Because if you're not, I'm next in line and I definitely would like to redeem that land. Well, the Bible never tells us the name of this kinsman redeemer, but he is immediate. He goes, oh yeah, all in. I'll definitely be happy to do that. I'll purchase the land. So why is he excited about that? Well, let me explain it to you. He just saw a chance to enhance his portfolio. He's about to become a lot richer. He's going to make an investment that's going to pay huge dividends down the line. He's going to redeem this property. It's going to become his property, even though it was originally Naomi's, because Naomi has no son, she has no husband, so there's nowhere for that land to go but into his portfolio. So this is an excellent business decision. There's no decision to be had. It's easy. This is going to make this man much, much, much more wealthy. But that's when Boaz does something kind of fun. Boaz knew what he was doing, by the way. He just puts it out there. He puts out the first part. But I want you to really understand that in those times, people would put the least important information first and the most important information last. I want you to hang on to this because this is going to be important, not just from about to tell you, but something what we're going to talk about as we move on through this. So Boaz puts the property out there first. But then he says to the man, oh, glad you want the property. And of course you understand that you're going to have to marry Ruth, the daughter-in-law of Naomi. You know, the one that was married to Mahlon, her oldest. You're going to have to marry him and have kids who will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family. Do you see what's about to happen here? This has gone from being a great business transaction to being what? A really terrible one, if that's all you're in it for. If you're in it for the money, this is suddenly flipped on its head. Why? Well, because if you have to marry Ruth, and then if the first child that Ruth has is actually Elimelech's child, well, then the property will not go to the kinsman redeemer. It will actually go to Elimelech's son by this. We talked about levirate marriage last week. You'll have to go back. I'm not going to explain it all again. Sorry. So what this man now thinks is this has gone from being a really good idea to what? He says, I can't do it then. Because that might endanger my own estate. Why? Because not only will the land not become his, it's going to still stay Naomi's. He's just going to pay off her debt, and it stays hers. So he's going to have to spend money, and then that land not only is not going to stay with him, but technically, the child that he has with Ruth would also be entitled to part of his estate. So not only does he not get Naomi's land, but now his land becomes partially Naomi's and Elimelech's. And if he has more children by Ruth, then some of that land will stay with them. But the majority is going to wind up over in Naomi's account, in Elimelech's family. Are we all following each other here? This is a little bit complicated, so I'm glad. Okay. So this man is like, wait a minute, whoa, whoa, whoa. No. We don't know whether he has kids, if he has another wife. Polygamy was a thing back then, so multiple wives was not going to be a massive issue for him. But what we do know is this is going to be a massive financial issue. And if you're just in it for the money, this is not a good deal. But what did I say? Boaz put what was most important last. What was most important to him was Ruth and Naomi and making sure that they were provided for financially and that his relative Elimelech had someone to carry on the family name. That was what was most important to Boaz. For Boaz, people first, money and business, distant second. The man says, I'm not going to do it. And Boaz says, well, then you know the drill. Take off your sandal. You understand what's going on here, right? Oh, no. Okay. So the way that they did business, particularly land deals in that time, the Bible tells us was to signify that a deal had been made, you'd have to take off your sandal and give it to the other person, and that makes complete sense. So I'm not even going to take time to, okay. I mean, everybody knows that when you have owned property, especially if you purchased it, but if it's your family property, you have to walk the boundaries of your property. It's required that you walk the boundaries of your property for it to remain and be your property. And so wherever your sandal touched, that's your property, if you've walked the boundaries. And so when you take off your sandal, you're symbolically handing over the boundaries of the property. You all knew that. I'm sorry. I just had to explain it in case. You're welcome. I'm here for you. Always. And now I want you to hear something profound that's going to happen. The transaction takes place. The nearest kinsman redeemer says, I'm not going to do it because it's not a good financial deal. Boaz says, I'm going to do it not because it's a good financial deal, but because it is the faithful and righteous and right thing to do to take care of Naomi and Elimelech and Ruth. And so what do these 10 witnesses, what do the people at the gate say after this transaction takes place? It's actually pretty profound because they say, may the Lord make Ruth, who is coming to your home, like Rachel and Leah. You do understand why this is profound, right? This is a foreigner. This is a Moabitess. And they're saying, may God make her like Rachel and Leah, from whom all the nation of Israel descended. In other words, may God put such a blessing on her that huge things come from this marriage. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of our ancestor Perez, the son of Tamar and Judah. That's a good story. Some of you haven't heard it, I can tell, because you would have laughed. I don't have time to tell it. You'll have to look it up for yourself some other time. But it is a fascinating thing that this is who they reference. This is not the most reputable way that somebody has ever been conceived, Perez. But this is who they reference. And they say, may you have descendants that will be like those of Perez, because the entire tribe of Judah. So the first blessing is all of Israel. The second blessing is the tribe of Judah specifically, because Perez is the descendant by levirate marriage of, well, not levirate, but anyway, won't go into that. But yes, levirate marriage. Descendant of Judah, the son of Judah, also the grandson of Judah. I told you it was a wacky story. And so Ruth and Boaz become husband and wife. They have a child. Child they name Obed. And the Bible tells us that they take Obed and they put Obed into Naomi's arms. And of course, no one person ever makes up for losing three people that you love. And yet there is a comfort for Naomi to see in her arms a child that will continue on the legacy of her dead husband and two boys. And there's some indication, again, scholars may argue about this a little bit, there's some indication that Ruth and Boaz actually give Obed to Naomi to raise. And the women and the town says, oh, you are so blessed, Naomi, because Ruth has been better to you than 10 sons would have been. So at the end of Ruth chapter 4, we see a 180-degree change from chapter 1. In chapter 1, we start off with poverty. We see the family having to leave because they're poor. They come back to Bethlehem, and they're still poor. But at the end of chapter 4, now suddenly Ruth and Naomi are rich. They have a provider, a kinsman redeemer who is wealthy and is providing not only for them, but their future and their future descendants. They're wealthy. At the beginning of chapter 1, we find death. At the end of chapter 4, there's birth and life. At the beginning of chapter 1, we find shame. We find somebody who's gone to a foreign country, allowed their children to marry those foreign people that the Bible tells them they're not supposed to marry, and then have to return to Bethlehem with everything broken and messed up. And surely the people of Bethlehem would have said, well, you know, like we saw in our play, well, you know, she probably had it coming. She wasn't doing what God wanted her to do, and so this is why all that horrible stuff. But at the end of chapter 4, there's security, honor even. Chapter 1, at the end, Naomi says, don't call me Naomi. That's not my name anymore. Call me Mara, because I'm bitter. I'm angry at what God's done to me. I'm a bitter, bitter person. And yet at the end of chapter 4, Naomi is filled with joy and happiness. In chapter 1, it's all about disaster. Everything wrong goes wrong that could possibly go wrong, with the exception of Ruth sticking with Naomi. And that must have felt like disaster for Ruth, because her prospects weren't good. But at the end of chapter 4, there's triumph. In chapter 1, we find Naomi coming back with Ruth, who is an outcast in her country and her culture. That Moabitess woman. And yet, at the end of chapter 4, she becomes the insider of insiders. Somebody who's blessed by the town to say, not only are you not an outcast, we hope that you're like some of our most famous ancestors. Could you say there's been a huge turnaround between chapter 1 and chapter 4? Family, for a lot of us, chapter 1 rolls around more often than we'd like it to. But I have good news. There's a chapter 4. Yeah, you're going to have to get through 2 and 3, but there is a chapter 4. And it's very easy in chapter 1 to think this is it. There's no point even going on. I'm done for. And the good news is, for those that follow Jesus Christ, there will be a chapter 4. Here or later. But there will be a chapter 4 where everything gets 180'd. Remember, I told you they always save everything, the most important thing, for the end. And at the end of chapter 4, after the story is done, we like to go ahead and close the book because there's a boring genealogy. And we're like, well, what does that have to do with anything? Not very important. So we go ahead and we read it through it really quick. Okay, blah, 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 the end. And I have read all of chapter 4. The book of Ruth is done. Yay. Look, there's David somewhere. Okay, that's cool. And we're moving on. But I told you that the ancients left the most important thing for the end. This genealogy is the most important part of the book of Ruth. So important that when we look at it, it actually shows up in another place. It shows up in Matthew, in his genealogy of Jesus Christ, the Savior of the world. And his genealogy looks a little something like this. Perez, whose mother was Tamar. And then there's Hezron, and we keep on going down the list, to Salmon, And we find out in the next verse, or in the next part, that Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. There's a few of you who just caught on to something. For those of you who don't know this story, that's okay, let me tell you. When the Israelites came into the promised land, they had to spy out the land. They sent out spies, and those spies went to a place called Jericho. And they kind of got themselves boxed in, so they had to find a place to hide. They found a sex worker by the name of Rahab, because it was not unusual for men to be coming and going from her place. And she hid them. And all she asked in return for hiding them was that her family not be destroyed when Jericho was destroyed by the Israelites. And the Israelites keep their promise. And I want to be straightforward. There are scholars who debate whether this is the same Rahab or not. But for me, I can't understand where the debate is. There is no other Rahab mentioned in the Old Testament. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense that Matthew would have just said, oh, Rahab, you don't know who she is, but I just thought I'd mention her. It makes all the sense in the world that Rahab is the Rahab in Jericho, and that she is Boaz's mother, which would have made Boaz half Canaanite, half Israelite, which might have made him a little bit more sympathetic to women who are in a hard place, which may have taught him the importance of being faithful to promises that are made. And what becomes even more fascinating about that to me is that means that Obed, whose mother was Ruth, Matthew helpfully tells us, because Matthew wants you to know who Jesus' descent, his ancestors were. There was Rahab and there was Ruth. That would have, by the way, made Obed 50% Moabite, 25% Canaanite, and 25% Israelite. You guys following along here? You see, as it turns out, that all the nations of the world start contributing to Jesus' genealogy, and Jesus is a blessing to all of humanity. And so when the story of Ruth is told, and we find King David, who the Bible says the kingship will never depart from him, and Jesus becomes the Savior of the world, the King of all kings. You guys following? The most important thing here is it's people that matter. It's people that matter. Now, I've told you over and over that people's names matter in this story. So Boaz, we talked about him, his name meaning strength. So Boaz and Ruth get married. Ruth means faithful friend. And then they have Obed, whose name means serving. Graduates that are here today, people that are here today, I want you to understand that the purpose of life is not about acquiring stuff. The purpose of life is to be faithful, to do what's right, and not to judge people on how they look or where they're from, but to do what is right because they are all creations of God. The purpose of life is to be a faithful servant of God. Though he was God, Jesus did not think of equality with God as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took on the position of a servant slave and was born as a human being. When he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. And Paul finishes by saying, do the same.
Hi, this is Randy McGray, podcast producer and host here at Whole Life Church. loving people into a lifelong friendship with God is our mission at the Whole Life Church, and our podcasts are designed to help facilitate conversations that help us grow together in that pursuit. Now that you've heard the message for this week, don't forget to check out the Whole Life Takeaways for this message. Swipe up in today's show notes and join the conversation. Speaking of conversations, each Wednesday morning we take a closer look at the week's message. That's right, the one you just listened to. We discuss practical ways to apply spiritual lessons and ask honest questions about the issues we face as Christians, all focused through the lens of grace. Your voice is a welcomed addition to that conversation. We encourage your thoughts and your questions by sending a voicemail or text to 407-965-1607 or send an email to podcast@wholelife.church. You can find everything podcast related on our website, wholelife.church/podcast. And plan on spending every Tuesday evening and Wednesday morning with us as we bring you the Whole Life Church inspiration you love straight into your headphones. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.